You mentioned meeting Fannie Lou Hamer. Can you just retell that story for me?
It was the day of Hurricane Camille, one of the worst hurricanes in our history. It devastated the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and Ms. Hamer was in Tuskegee speaking. And I was struck by how boldly she spoke. Coming out of the Mississippi Delta, she talked about the people who were oppressing black people there. And I'd never heard anybody stand up and do that publicly. And so I went up to her and asked her afterwards, why did you choose to do this work? And she said, well, baby, I didn't choose. I was chosen. So I went on off to law school. We had to leave because people were coming off the Gulf Coast, coming into Montgomery to stay. And so we had to scuffle around trying to find a hotel that would take some people. But I never forgot what she said. And when I was in law school a few years later, she passed. And I couldn't attend her funeral. I wanted to go so badly, and I felt that I owed her something. But as it would work out, I went to Mississippi to work. And I was organizing rural women, and they used to invoke her name. But I knew, even though she had only been dead for a few years, I knew that regular people, not women activists, didn't know about her, or it was fading from their memory. And so it bothered me.
It bothered you that generations of women were coming along who didn't know who Fannie Lou Hamer was?
Yes, it bothered me. And I wanted people to know who she was and to know what her life had been like. I was in Washington and I picked up a Sojourner magazine, and they had done a series on Miss Hamer. And I was reading it on the plane, and it just brought tears to my eyes, several articles about her. And I decided, the light bulb went off, you know, you can do something. And so I decided to do a one-woman show right there on the plane.
And what year was that?
That was 1982. When I got home, I began my research, talking to people who had worked with her in the struggle, people who were close to her. I went to her family and asked her husband and her daughters if I could do the show. And they were very pleased. And so that was my go-ahead. So 10 months later, I premiered the show. I wrote it. We didn't have a theater, per se, in Mississippi for me to do it with. And because I had done community theater, I knew that I could direct myself. And I didn't have to worry about people missing rehearsals. If I did a one-woman show, I could do it. And so I did.
What aspects of her life did you want to highlight and why?
One, her fearlessness. But even more than that, who she was. So many times people think that the unlettered people don't know anything. And Miss Hamer spoke my first tongue. The voice I heard of my mother from the Alabama Black Belt. I know that my mother was a wise woman, and I knew that that was true of Fannie Lou Hamer as well. And yet many times people don't hear them because they don't speak the King's English, as it were. And so that was another reason, one of the main reasons I wanted it, because people like Miss Hamer get left out. And I knew from the research that there were people who did not want her to speak publicly during the movement, but she spoke anyway, and she was heard. And so I wanted to validate that. I also wanted for people to know that one person can make a great deal of change. She was in a community where, you know, she was on a plantation, and the plantation owner didn't like what she did when she went to try to register to vote, and told her she needed to go and take her name off the application. And she said, well, now, sir, see, I didn't try to register for you. I was registering for myself.
That's fearlessness.
Yes, yes. And, of course, he put them out of his house. Her husband stayed until he finished the crop. And she, motivated by that and by the young people of SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, who loved her because she was with them, she could hear them, and they knew she was right. And so they didn't have to second guess her. She wasn't middle class. She didn't have anything to lose. She had already lost her place to stay. And so they pushed Ms. Hamer. They wanted her to be heard. Women were not heard from that much in the civil rights movement, and certainly not unlearned women.
Why is Fannie Lou Hamer's fight still important today?
Well, the opposition she met to voting when she went to register, voting literacy tests that were ridiculous. We have a new form of that today with all the Department of Motor Vehicle offices being closed, and poor people and people in the Black Belt of Alabama can't vote because they can't get a place to get voter ID. So voter ID for me is a kind of new form of the literacy test. Also, the Black Lives Matter movement had to come into play because young Black men are being killed and discriminated against in so many different ways. So we're sort of spiraling backwards, and it matters a lot that people hear from her and hear her voice. I want them to say, as did Fannie Lou Hamer, "I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired." She coined that phrase. A lot of people say it, don't know that she said it first.
My mother says that all the time. She's been saying it my whole life, and I had no idea that Fannie Lou Hamer said that.
Yes, it came from Fannie Lou Hamer. And she never stopped. You know, she was beaten and jailed in Mississippi for her activities, but she continued. And that's what I want people to know about. While people are being so particular sometimes with worrying about their livelihood being snatched away, I want people to know that this woman with nothing, put out of a house. This woman didn't have an education, but she spoke to the National Democratic Convention in 1964 and rocked it.
Before she was unfortunately cut off by Yes. President Lyndon B. Johnson.
Yes. President Johnson called a press conference and drew the press away from her. What some people may not remember is that the press was pretty perturbed about that, and the next day they played her speech twice, the whole thing.
That'll teach you, LBJ. On to your show, Fannie Lou Hamer, This Little Light. You've performed this show more than 800 times on 4 different continents. How do you ever have those moments where before you get on stage, you're just like, oh, I'm doing it again. You know, what do you do in your process as an actor to keep the material new when you perform it?
Well, I'll tell you. I was invited to Ms. Hamer's hometown for my second show. And of course, I was much younger, 3 decades ago. And I went to her house. The Fannie Lou Hamer Daycare Center had invited me to come in Ruleville, Mississippi. And I went to her house to see her husband and her daughters. They gave me her room to change in. It was at a community center where the show was going to be held. So I went in that room, and all those years later, they still had most of her things sitting out. She liked her little wigs, and they had her wig stand still sitting there with her wig, and some of her clothes were there, bed she slept in. And there was a picture of her on the wall. And it was one of those pictures where the eyes seemed to follow you. And I became very frightened because I began to think about the reality of what my young self was doing. And that was, I was in this woman's hometown where everybody remembered her. It's not like some distant figure. We're talking, I believe it was 5 or 6 years later. And so I began to think, Lord, don't let me make a fool out of myself in Ms. Hamer's hometown. And so I cried in there. And then I got down on my knees by her bed, and I prayed. It is the same prayer that I pray every time I do the show, no matter how I'm treated, because those 800 performances have not been done in long runs. They've been done a night or two at a time by venues where many times people have never had an actor to come before. They've never hosted anybody before. But they want this piece. And so they don't really know how to treat you as an actor. And it might make you a little upset sometimes. I never take any of that on the stage with me. Because I pray and I meditate. Doing this show has healed me. I was in the Caribbean. I got out of my hospital bed and went to do a show in the Caribbean because I was scheduled to go. And I walked on stage to do the show, and I totally forgot that I had been sick. And when I came off the stage, I had none of the misery that I had before. It energizes me. I don't think of anything but her when I do the show.
You become her.
I think so.
You invoke her spirit.
Yes, and I feel it, you know. I feel the show. So it's not a chore for me.
We've discussed how there are generations of people in the United States coming up who are not familiar with Fannie Lou Hamer. And in your biography on your webpage, you say that you've performed this on four different continents. How do people outside of the United States receive your show and the message, the story of Fannie Lou Hamer that you tell?
Beautifully. One of the things that always strikes me, and I have come to realize, is that most people identify with struggle. Most people have had some kind of struggle, if not as a group, a personal struggle. They identify with the fact that she was an unlettered woman, a common woman. I've purposefully kept my costume simple. I don't try to dress it up and make her into something she wasn't. And so people hear this story of this woman addressing these ills in her community, and they know she was speaking for the right. It doesn't matter whether or not their particular circumstances are the same. In India, in Delhi, the woman came backstage. A woman came and cupped my face in her hands to thank me with tears streaming down her face, saying, "Thank you for this, for the women, for regular women." And so people know that they don't have to be some great somebody that everybody knows about in order to be honored, to have themselves affirmed. The Pakistani women came to me. They waited for me. I didn't even know they were out there. I had finished a talk back and gone back. And they came, and they wanted to know from me, "How did you do this? We need to do this for our women." People can understand drama. They can understand it through the arts better than they can if we stand up and preach to them. So part of it is the medium, I think, and part of it is the universality of the human experience.
When you realize that there are generations of people who don't know who Aunt Fannie Lou Hamer was, how does that make you feel?
Well, two things. The show in 30 years has brought her to a lot of people. It has taken her out of the deep darkness into a little bit of light. I've done this show on military bases, for government groups, all kinds of people, some of the Ivy League universities. I take a lot of satisfaction from knowing that Fannie Lou Hamer, this little light, my one-person performance, has helped to do that. It dismays me that so many young people don't know on whose shoulders they stand, don't know that we have the opportunity to vote, to utilize public accommodations, all these things that they just take for granted, because this woman had a part in it. Not just the people who got political appointments, whose names are household words now. They know about those people because a few people are promoted. And especially are the men promoted. Fannie Lou Hamer is not the only woman who's not promoted. There were lots of women in the civil rights movement who weren't promoted. And so it dismays me, but one of the reasons that I treat it the way I do, that is to say, I put it in a book. And to its credit, the state of Alabama has recommended that book and that piece as a supplement for social studies in grades 4 through 11.
So they're teaching your book.
Fear Not the Fall.
Fear Not the Fall.
Yes.
Fannie Lou Hamer, This Little Light is the show.
Yes.
The state of Alabama is supplementing your show, your book on Fannie Lou Hamer as a social studies teaching tool in elementary schools. Is that correct?
You'll notice that I said it is a recommended supplement. Therefore, the teachers have to choose it.
I see.
Yes. And so some do. I don't know that they all do in all schools, but some of them do. Every little bit helps. It's baby steps, increments. I do perform in quite a few of the schools in Mississippi. Before I left there, I lived in Mississippi for 15 years, and I performed there every Black History Month. I did tours many times, most of the times for free, in the public schools there, trying to make sure that Mississippi school children knew about her. Schools have me to come and perform now, especially with the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act having happened. And so it's hills and valleys. Depends on what is going on in the country, in the culture.
What keeps you going?
It's the love of theater is one. And a love of Miss Hamer. She meant so much to us. And I want everybody to know about her. Her goodness, her sacrifice. And so I know that we cannot expect anyone else to tell our story for us. We have to tell them ourselves. We have to be the preservers of our own truths. And so I encourage young people to do that. Doing this show has made me write other plays about the civil rights movement. And that is one of the things that I continue to talk to people about, is sharing the stories of people in the movement. There are so many foot soldiers that nobody knows about. And one of the ways that we can do that in our communities is to make the plays and bring the children in to perform and teach them.
If you continue on the way you're going, eventually someone will write a play about you.
Perhaps. Perhaps.
I'd like you to give me one of your favorite Fannie Lou Hamer phrases, her Hamerisms, as you call them. Maybe something, just a little excerpt from your one-woman show to carry us out.
I used to sip when I was working so hard in the cotton field. If I could just get to Washington, to the Congress, to the Justice Department, to the FBI, get close enough up on them, you know, to let them know what was going on in Mississippi, I was sure that I could change everything in just 1 week. Now that I have traveled across America, been to the Congress, to the Justice Department, to the FBI, I'm faced with some things I ain't too sure I wanted to find out. This young sickness in Mississippi ain't no Mississippi sickness. This is America's sickness.